You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
We've been talking for like a half hour, assuming we've been rolling on the air, talking about the Bloomin' Onion, how unhealthy it is, talking about pickles, whether or not they ruin the taste, a very pungent taste. I want top five pungent taste from Chris Whittingham. We're talking about posters on Smitty's wall. She had a Derrick Rose poster. We were all under the assumption that we had been taping it on air for the last 30 minutes. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like the show started 30 minutes ago, and yet Whittingham just made us start again. How about that?
I'm glad because I just walked in 3 minutes ago.
Right on time.
Sounds like one hell of a show you guys did. What's wrong with the Bloomin' Onion?
I talked to Tony. He says it's the most unhealthy thing on any menu in America.
That's right. Check any list. It's the most unhealthy food you can buy in a restaurant. And I think Billy went and searched stuff that you can find at a festival or a fair of some sort. This is the worst thing you can get at a restaurant.
Most unhealthy food at a restaurant is what you say. There's got to be something worse than a Bloomin' Onion, right? What's wrong? Because it's deep fried. Is that why?
It's super deep fried, and I think all the salt and stuff they put in it just makes it like a bomb of
There's a, 155 grams of fat, 123 grams of carbs, and 3,840 milligrams of sodium.
What about chicken fried steak? That sounds like something. It's red meat, and it's also deep fried.
There can't be anything that is just so purposely fried and gross than chicken fried. I never understood the appeal of it, other than it being the cheapest thing on the meat menu, like at Cracker Barrel, is you can get a chicken fried steak for like $11. But the sauce they pour on it too, it is just the whole concept is fat.
You're telling me that's healthier than a Bloomin' Onion, Tony?
I am telling you that, actually.
What is the grossest thing you could fry, like in batter, like a chicken?
Anything at the state fair or like deep fried like Twinkies,
Oreos. I'm thinking like a shoe or something. Oh. Like, what could you deep fry and still eat? That would be the most disgusting. Oh.
A shoe?
Well, you wouldn't eat a shoe. So it would have to be something that you could plausibly eat. I saw yesterday a woman on TikTok who put together a hamburger with like hamburger meat, lettuce, and tomato, and surrounded that concoction with four pieces of cheese, dunked the thing in batter, and then it was like cheese was the bun, and then it was surrounded by fried batter, and now that was the hamburger. It was gross.
Heaven.
No, it sounds awful.
Can we hit pause for a second? Because someone said poop. I mean, I don't know who it was, but is someone suggesting that you could eat deep fried shit? I mean, is that what we're doing here?
The better question is, if you deep fried shit, would it actually be edible?
Huh.
With a nice crispy breading.
The fried batter like, itself doesn't contain flavor. Like, you're still eating shit.
Are we cooking it to temperature? Are we like baking all of the potential parasites out of it? Because then I guess you could eat it.
Would it be edible though? Would you be like, oh, this tastes like shit? Or are you like, huh, Not bad.
I think deep fried makes everything edible, you know? I do. I think deep fried gives you the best chance of making something that you would normally consider not, you know, not be edible and make it delicious. So I'm actually contemplating whether or not deep fried poop would be delicious or not, or something I could eat if I went like, you know, 5 or 6 days without eating a single thing.
I like the idea of Stugatz stuck out in the wild somewhere. He's like, hey, he's the cell phone broken. No one knows where he is. Like, I'm dying here, but I happen to have a deep fryer on me. This is the only way for survival.
Deep fried poop sandwich with pickles. I mean, it sounds delightful.
Nice
it does.
Crunch to it.
Where are you on pickles? Because Woody said it ruins everything for him, and I love pickles.
Pickles are great. That crunch gives it a different kind of texture going. And I love anything vinegar. Like anything vinegary, oh, I love it. That's why I like hot sauce. I don't like hot sauce because, oh, it's not spicy enough. I like it because of the vinegary taste.
Oh, terrible. Terrible. I hate vinegar.
You hate cucumbers too though.
Yes, I hate cucumbers as well, so it's a double
whammy. The pickles are basically like the goat.
Yeah, it's off limits. It's the opposite of the goat.
No, I mean, it's a goat food that you won't eat.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
the greatest food you won't eat of all time.
If you say so. Yeah, you say so.
Do you guys think the taste of poop changes based on what you had before?
1,000%.
Yes.
1,000%. I know because it smells different depending on what I had the day before.
You know?
I know because it smells different. And smell and taste are the two most closely linked senses.
But like, if I went a week and all I ate was chocolate, mm-hmm. would that poop taste vastly different from like going an entire week where I ate only fish?
Let me tell you this. Has this ever happened to you after a night of lots of drinking, just total alcohol absorption? The next morning you take a poop and then when you get up, you smell booze lifting off of. Has that ever happened to you?
Never. Never.
You guys know? Am I the only one?
Where the next morning your poop smells like the alcohol you were drinking the night before?
Like you had so much that just like
it absorbed into everything.
Coming out of your like poop is coming out, but it's being like it's like coming out like a flume, like Splash Mountain, with like the water being bourbon that's pushing it out like the log.
No, not even when it's solid. Yes, when it comes out like a flume. But yes, sometimes even when it's solidly and just plops out, it's got this vapor of alcohol coming off of it. To be fair, I have an extraordinary sense of smell. Like I can smell things that people can't for some reason. That's my superpower, that and not getting hangovers.
You also have an alcohol problem. Oh, I mean,
the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, to God.
Wait, Tony, why are you shaking your head? You smelled alcohol in your shit? I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. When we were in Cleveland, the first night we were in Cleveland, me and Amin went absolutely ham. And that night or the next morning, I was like, Jameson.
Yep. I smelled the tequila shots. That's everywhere we went. My guy, Ricky. Shout out to @Raconia on Twitter and Instagram.
Just had a guy named Ricky handing you shots.
Ricky's the mayor of Cleveland.
He's a comedian. He's from Cleveland. And so when we linked up with my friend works for the local council or whatever, the sports council for the greater Cleveland area. And they assigned us with Ricky and said, this guy will take care of you. And we like me and Tony thought it was just some. We didn't know him. It was like, oh, it's corny comedian, some guy named Ricky Smith or whatever. I mean, first of all, I didn't know he's black. So that changed the dynamic immediately. And then Ricky reveals that me and him had met before. And I said, I don't think so. He said, yes. And he starts to describe this night in L.A. that I remember very clearly and vividly. And I was like, that was you? Because I went to some sort of performance and I took a date. And Ricky was there. And then afterward, the place was right next to this dive bar called The Dime. We went to The Dime and I got drunk, like really, really messed up drunk. And it basically ruined the date. Like I was like, kiss that one goodbye. This ain't happening. And so Ricky claims I tapped out, which I don't remember, but given that I was busy ruining a date, might've happened. So I made it my mission to not tap out in Cleveland. I said, we'll see about that. And so he says, oh, yeah? So the first thing we drank was this Jameson Orange. I'd never heard of it up until that point. Now it's like a little, I don't know, Tony, have you been seeing it in places? But now I see it everywhere. But at the time, it's like this, the first place.
It's brand new, yeah.
It's brand new. We did a shot of Jameson Orange. And then immediately afterward, let's do tequila shots. And then we went from restaurant to restaurant. These really, this one restaurant to sushi place, this head chef was a guy that worked at Nobu in Milan, but he's from Cleveland. So he came back, he wanted world-class sushi in Cleveland. And we went to all these places. Everywhere we went, everyone loves Ricky. Oh, Ricky. And he's like, what are you guys drinking? And so we did shots. And then we went to...
drank everything.
Then we went to the Mountain Dew party. We won't talk about that.
No, you have to talk about that.
Oh, man. The Statue of Limitations.
I am privy to this story. And I think the audience now needs... you're in too deep. I mean, you can't eject right now. You're at the best part of the story.
Tony, should I tell the...
Yeah, tell it.
I'm going to tell the clean version because the other version is definitely like people getting canceled and fired and everything. But we went to the Mountain Dew party. Ricky got us in. It's an open bar. We started drinking in there. At this point, like, we've had way too much alcohol, but we're still going. And the Mountain Dew party is decorated with all of these lime green Mountain Dew basketballs. If you've seen the commercial with Zach Levine and Charlie Day, those balls that they have in that commercial were all over this suite. So Tony's like, wow, those balls are cool. And I said, grab one. I said, what do you mean? I said, no one cares, man. Just grab a ball and go. He's like, I can't walk out with a basketball. They're like, Tony, you've got this huge trench coat on. Just put it under your arm, under the trench coat, and you're good. He's like, yeah? I'm like, yeah. So he grabs it, and then we leave. Before we leave, I say, hold on. We go out into the lobby. I say, wait, I got to go to the bathroom. I go in the bathroom. Guy walks into the bathroom with a blazer on and stuff. I'm like, whatever. I leave, and everyone looks kind of shook up. I said, what's wrong? I said, yo, the president of Mountain Dew just walked into that bathroom. And I said, that guy doesn't care. Like, you think he's looking like, oh, that's part of our marketing initiative. That guy's so far up. He has no idea. Oh, whatever. And even if he did have an idea that that basketball was his, part of their thing, when are you ever going to see this guy again? So we leave. We go to the next bar. We have a couple drinks there. Cool. We go to the next bar after that, and we walk in, and lo and behold, at the very first booth when walking in is a group of people that I recognize from the Mountain Dew party. And then I see that blazer. I'm like, oh my God, it's the president of Mountain Dew. Tony's walking in like he just won a championship with a game ball under his arm. Spinning it like Tony, he's like a globetrotter. He walks in and looks at the table, and the president of Mountain Dew says, that's a cool basketball. Where'd you get it from? And Tony's like, oh, yeah, I went to the Mountain Dew party. And I'm dying laughing because, A, Tony's worst nightmare came true that we did see this dude again, and he did recognize the basketball was his. But, B, Tony has absolutely no idea. He's telling a full story. Yeah, I just walked in, grabbed it, put it under my trench coat, walked out. I said, oh, my God. That's the clean version of the Mountain Dew story.
I wish you would tell the other version told me.
I can't tell.
No, you can't do that. But Tony's walking around with a basketball in his trench coat.
Yeah, I'm like Metal Arc Lemon, just like spinning my ball on my finger all of a sudden because I didn't see the trench coat.
Were you whistling?
Yes, I didn't see his blazer on. See, he had the blazer on the chair. So as he asked me, it's just a white shirt. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I got it at the Mountain Dew party. Like, look at this. You want to grab it?
It's like a seal.
Like, nah, I'm good.
I found it funny that Amin said that this Nobu chef wanted world-class sushi in Cleveland.
Yeah,
it was a weird line, yeah.
That's what he said, though.
That's what they told us. I'm just repeating. I'm not saying this is what's happening in Cleveland, world-class sushi. I'm saying this is what they told me. So,
right, but if you're a Nobu chef, it would stand to reason that you would win some sort of, cooking award in Cleveland, right? I mean...
are you up to date on who won the sushi awards?
Cleveland has a good food scene.
They do?
I've heard.
Bunch of Michelin restaurants.
No one associates Cleveland with a good food scene. Nobody.
There's like a couple good restaurants there that I always see Cleveland chefs on Chop too. I feel like they do have like
Michael Simon
food scene. Yes. Michael Simon is a very famous chef from Cleveland. I always thought it was weird because I lived in Indiana during college and I'd have friends who, I went to Notre Dame. I'd have friends who didn't want to get sushi, we didn't want to go out to sushi restaurants while we were there, and they'd be from the East Coast, and they'd be like, I don't want to get sushi in Indiana, the nearest body of water is so far away. And I'm like, you know that the sushi, if you get salmon sushi in Connecticut, it's probably not fresh off of a fisherman's boat. It's probably coming from the same source. I always thought that was funny because most of the sushi that you get in a lot of places
It's probably already been frozen. It's not a big deal. It's fine. Just eat it.
And that's, but that's everywhere, right? Like, everywhere claims to have... No one's getting fresh fish. Come on.
Right. Unless it's really expensive.
Exactly. Exactly. So just, you know, get over yourself. Get the sushi. Keep it moving.
Who are you telling to get over yourself?
Everybody. Everybody.
What do you mean? Why?
Because all these people are like, oh, I would never get sushi in Arizona. That can't be fresh. First of all, we get our prawns. They grow them in the lakes in right. Arizona. But second of all, get over yourself. You think you went to Katsuya and everything there is fresh. Get
right, you only go to sushi restaurants where everything is like being shipped in that morning. Oh, what's it like to spend $1 million on sushi every month? Must be nice.
To be fair, I've been to one of those places.
Oof. I know. I actually Uchi in Miami, they have
it's a big difference,
amazing
right?
Sushi. Yeah,
like, yeah. You can tell the
so
difference.
Then why are you telling people to get over themselves?
Because they're
exactly
they're
that's
not
like
going
a once that's like a once a year thing. It's not like I don't like if you know what I love? One of my favorite things is supermarket sushi. When you go into Publix, I don't actually know if Publix has it. But
of course it does. $5 off on Wednesdays.
Exactly. Fresh Market has it. I think Whole Foods has a little sushi bar. It's just such a good, like, easy thing to grab and then go and eat it. And I just feel like my life would be have so much less joy in it if I was afraid to eat that because I was like, well, I'm in a state that's landlocked.
No, supermarket sushi, though, is kind of sketch, no? You guys going out here just grabbing gas station sushi and just like, let's go.
I mean, my wife loves sushi. I don't love sushi. I like a spicy tuna roll every now and then, inside out, yeah. Sesame seeds. Yeah, I like that. A little wasabi, you know, just to spice things up a little bit. Like, I love a good spicy tuna roll, but my wife is a sushi connoisseur, and she gets it from Publix all the time and says it's delightful, like delicious. She doesn't get the gas station sushi, I mean, but she goes to Publix. She gets, like, that pack of 12, yeah. a 12-pack of California rolls, and she loves them.
Also, sushi is a food I can't have if I'm hungry. Sushi is if I'm a little bit hungry. Like, oh, what do you want? Let's go get
it's
sushi.
An appetizer.
But if I'm starving, oh, man, sushi doesn't do the trick.
Do you need to eat something hot when you're really hungry to feel like you've, like, fully, like, eaten?
No gazpacho.
Do you need, like, a warm meal? Because sometimes I feel like if I'm really hungry, I need, like, a warm meal. It doesn't matter, like, the amount of food. It just needs to be warm.
So, like, a sub... If you get like a turkey
sub.
Yeah,
like I couldn't do like a sandwich.
But what if you get a hot sub?
Oh,
like a chicken parm
now
sub?
Cooking with gas.
Like a chicken parm or the Burger King chicken sandwich with cheese, extra mayo, lettuce. How about that?
I dated someone once whose Subway order was a meatball sub with mayonnaise.
Oh my God.
That is the biggest red flag in hindsight that I could think
evil.
Of.
Hindsight.
He used to get, I mean, well, we're obviously not dating
would be good.
Anymore.
Hold on, but at the time,
what is sight that happens in the present moment? There's foresight, there's hindsight.
Sight?
Is there just
I think it's
plain
sight.
Old sight? Sight? Plain old sight?
Yeah, like, are
in
you
sight.
Looking at this, Jessica? Sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to Subway and it was like, they like put the meatballs on the sub and then like squirted all this mayonnaise in it and then like closed it. And I was like, what?
So do you guys like, see, on that note, customer kills Subway worker over, quote, too much mayonnaise. Customer has killed an Atlanta Subway employee and injured another over too much mayo.
Really?
I shouldn't laugh.
Seems excessive.
Mayo sounds different coming out of the squeeze thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
and
I
think
thing?
It's worse.
Like a fart.
Yeah, I think it's worse. It's like if your mayo is applied by squeeze bottle, you're not eating proper mayo.
What?
No, it's true. I think I know this is going to sound crazy. Maybe we could do this next week. I feel like if we did like a hearing test, and you were squirting ketchup, mayo, and like something else out of the squirt containers, I could tell you what mayo sounded
like.
That's
a great idea. We should do that. We're going to get you a blindfold, and we're going to do this next week.
This sounds like a mystery crit if I've
never
heard
finished
one.
our Hunt's versus Heinz blind taste test.
That one's easy. Everyone knows.
No, I won that one.
Heinz. Right?
Wait, so Billy, I like this idea, but are you saving it for Mystery Crate, or is it something we could do on the show next week?
No, this is not something we could do with Dan anywhere near the proceedings. No, this is a Mystery Crate.
Wait,
it's basically just condiments farting and me saying that one sounds like this.
Yes, that is reserved for a day where Dan is nowhere within 5 miles of you, okay? It's a good call by you, Billy.
Are we going to get Witty's top five pungent foods, or was that an off-air conversation?
No. I think we are, but I do have a question for you guys. Do you guys have, like, for me, my favorite dish is chicken parm. Do you guys have restaurants where they're not normally known for something that you love, but it's the best you've ever had? Like, for me, when I go to the Palm restaurant, which is a steakhouse, right? What I've stumbled upon when I go to the Palm is they have the best chicken parm I've ever had. And I'll tell you another place, Joe's Stone Crab is not known for its fried chicken. It's known for its stone crabs. Yet, the fried chicken I get at Joe's Stone Crab is the best fried chicken I have ever had in my entire life.
Like, Stugatz, I've heard it's amazing, and it's like $8 or something.
Super cheap.
Really?
Yeah. It's like $8, I mean. It's fantastic.
It's like a whole bird.
Yeah, it really is. I don't like stone crab. My family loves stone crab, and so I take them to Joe's often. My wife loves to go there, but she's always concerned there's nothing on the menu for me. And usually, well, for many years, there wasn't, until I stumbled upon the fried chicken at Joe's Stone Crab, and it was the best I've ever had.
What? Fried half chicken, $9. No way.
Cheapest thing on the menu.
Hold on,
what's going on? One jumbo stone crab's like $70.
Time out. Hold on. Are you guys not alarmed that everything on this menu is super expensive and the fried chicken is $9? Like, what's wrong with that chicken?
No, there's a story behind it. Jess, do you know the story?
No, I don't know the story, but wait, before you tell the story, Amin, I was there recently with like my friend and her husband, and he only eats chicken. He doesn't eat seafood. And he was like, I'm going to order the fried chicken. And then we're like, okay. And he's like, it says on the menu $9. I think there's supposed to be a one in front of it. So it's $19. And I was like, well, I feel like there's probably not a typo on their very fancy menu. And then he ordered it and they rang us up and it was actually $9. Okay. We all just talked about it for like an hour, how cheap it was.
Tony, before you get into your thing, I want to play a little game. I'm looking at the Joe's Stone Crab menu, and I'm going through the sides, and I want you guys to say more expensive or less expensive than the fried chicken, right? We'll start with asparagus, steamed, grilled, or fried. More expensive or less expensive?
Wait, you're saying the fried chicken. What was the price of the fried chicken? I'm going to go more expensive than the fried chicken, the asparagus.
Anyone else? We're all going up, all right? That's right.
Oh, there we go.
$12.95 for the asparagus. All right, next up is fried green tomatoes. Fried green tomatoes. Jess says lower. Tony says higher.
Yes, but Jess says lower with just pointing her finger down in an audio medium. Yeah.
Lower.
If we're saying lower, the answer.
I'm only laughing. That was followed by two middle fingers from Jess right at me, square in my face. I mean, just with kickstands, by the way. A 20-something-year-old person.
The answer is incorrect. It is higher. It is $12.95 for fried green tomatoes. Next up, grilled tomatoes. This is with spinach stuffing and melted cheese.
Higher. Delightful. A little spinach in between the tomato and the cheese. Absolutely delightful. There's no way that thing is less than $15. Zero chance.
Sorry, the answer is lower. It is
What?
It's $8.95 or $9.95. Excuse me. No, it is higher. My fault.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I told you.
$9.95. That's a fine. I read the internet wrong. All right, next up, the twice baked potato. The twice baked potato.
Higher.
You're right. $10.95 for the twice.
It's the baked. Second baking, yeah.
All right, now finally, hash brown potatoes or Lyonnaise?
Oh, the hash brown potatoes are the best, right, Tony?
Higher. So good.
Right, hash brown potatoes or Lyonnaise is trick question. The small is a $7.95, the large is a $12.95, and that's gonna do it for Joe's Stone Crab menu challenge. Tony, you had a stone crab story you wanted to share with us?
No, so the reason why the fried chicken is so low, rumor has it and legend has it that the owner of Joe's Stone Crabs wanted to make sure that the kitchen staff was able to eat something that they were they could afford. So they made the fried chicken super cheap so that they could buy it and take it home.
Or how about you give your kitchen staff some free food at the end of the night? How about that? You cheap bastard. Oh, look at me. I'm so magnanimous. Oh, guys, I'm going to have a menu item that you poor can afford. Sorry, guys.
I want to get to Amin's thoughts on Kevin Durant here. I want to get to Smetty's posters on her wall when she was growing up. But Woody, do you indeed have a top five for us?
I do. I have my top five pungent flavors.
Oh wow, this is exciting!
I've got the bell ready.
Well, I have fanfare as well. So
just in case if that doesn't
generally
work,
generally how we do the top five list.
I'm ready.
Well, do you want your own fanfare or do you want Amin's crappy fanfare? What? Which one do you want?
I think as an audio payoff for the audience, the sound of a pathetic bell doesn't exactly capture the essence of the top five list.
Sorry.
What if it's a bad list, though?
Well, you know what?
Wow, that's a good point.
I'll leave you guys to decide that. Okay. All right, number five, garlic.
This is the five best, right?
Okay, so I decided not to go for flavors that bother me. I decided just straight up pungent flavors.
The most.
If something is covered in garlic, you can only taste the garlic.
Yeah,
you're not really tasting anything else.
You're complaining about it. You're just saying this is the reality.
I actually mostly like the taste of garlic. Most of the rest of these are not really for me, Clive. But
is this taste or smells?
It's taste.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Woody, of your top five, the garlic is the one where if it's the pungent taste, you're okay with it. Yeah. The other four, they ruin anything they're on, right?
Correct.
You're not getting it for that. You're getting it to not have that.
Basically, the list is things that when this flavor is included, that thing only tastes like that.
It steals the show.
It steals the show. It is a show stealing flavor. Number four, jalapenos. Number three, cucumbers.
No. Cucumbers don't have a flavor.
I don't even notice a cucumber.
Yeah, really. It distracts me. It's a distracting food.
Should be number two.
I don't like it. Number two is Christmas.
Take that back then.
And number one is pickles.
Terrible list.
No banana. No raw onion.
No banana.
Why are you objecting to the list? What's the matter?
Terrible list.
Such cucumber, a bad list.
Cucumbers don't taste like anything. They have a texture, but they don't really have a strong flavor. It's a very hint of a flavor.
No, they taste like cucumber, and cucumbers taste awful.
It's so aggressive. Like, you don't find that when, like, you put a cucumber on a sandwich, like, oh, every bite tastes, and because it has a little bit of a juice, that juice gets on other foods as well.
So the
lettuce tastes like cucumber. The bread tastes like cucumber. Everything tastes like cucumber.
I don't agree with this at all. And pickle doesn't really taste like pickle. It tastes like vinegar. That's what's going on there.
Isn't a pickle a cucumber too?
Yes.
Yes.
Just
all
pickled.
All pickles are cucumbers, but not all cucumbers are pickles.
What?
Yeah. That's.
Well, how does that work? And a pickle's not a cucumber. A pickle's a pickle. A cucumber's a cucumber.
No, a pickle's
what are we talking about?
A pickle's a cucumber that's been sitting in vinegar for quite a while.
Well, you can pickle anything. You can pickle carrots.
But you don't call them pickled.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. The only thing that's called just pickle is a cucumber that's been pickled.
And Tommy Pickles.
Huh.
Pickles the dog.
What?
Wow. Wait, I mean, you didn't like Whittingham's list there? No one seemed to like Whittingham's list.
It's his list. It started strong, by the way. Like, I won't lie. I was like, yeah, you're right, man. Garlic does kind of steal the show. Oh, yeah, jalapeno does steal the show. And then I fell apart after that. Even Christmas doesn't steal the show like that.
All right, everyone's communicating to me via thumbs. I mean, I'm getting thumbs down. I'm getting middle fingers from Jess. I'm also getting thumbs down from Jess. I'm getting thumbs down from Tony. I just got another middle finger from Jess. Why don't you guys put together your own top five list to rival Chris Whittingham's list, and we'll go around the room here.
Me and Tony will work on a joint list.
Yeah.
Okay.
I refuse to put banana on mine.
All right.
Curry.
Well, I have a question.
Curry's got to make an appearance.
So a pickled cucumber is a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
What you were saying is a cucumber that's not pickled, obviously, is not a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
I've answered my own question. I was trying to figure out your statement.
Good job, Billy.
Every pickle is a cucumber, but every cucumber is not a pickle. It's because of the process.
Yeah.
We don't need to. Yeah, let's just keep it moving.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Levitard.
Again, started on the breakfast flan.
Oh, man. I've been singing a song to myself all morning long. What? Breakfast flan.
Stugatz.
Have you never heard the breakfast flan
no,
song?
No, hit me with it.
Okay. I wish I had some breakfast flan. Breakfast flan. Where can I find a breakfast like that?
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
I'll get to Jess's posters on the wall in a second. I mean, I am interested here. No, because Jess, you'll be proud of me. I had a Sports Illustrated collage growing up of all the famous covers. Like, I would get one every single week, Jess used to work for SI. And I would get a Sports Illustrated in the mail every single week. And I would take the covers and I would put them on a poster board, and I created a collage that I kept in my room. It was very exciting. I also had all the Islander posters in my room growing up. You know, the drive for five, you know, they won four in a row, and they were great posters. So I'm fascinated by posters in people's rooms while they were growing up. But I do want to talk some basketball real quick, Amin, because I'm not really that interested in the Kyrie Irving portion of this. Maybe he goes to the Lakers. I think he'll end up staying with the Nets. I am fascinated by Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and that relationship and where I believe it's going. Because I do believe that while Kevin Durant is maintaining some sort of distance from these conversations and appearing to have Kyrie Irving's back, I don't think we arrive at this point with the Nets without Kevin Durant signing off on the Nets being without Kyrie Irving, meaning he's willing. I believe Kevin Durant, who went to Brooklyn to play with his best friend, Kyrie Irving, I believe it took all of 2 years for Kevin Durant, like the rest of us, to get sick of Kyrie Irving, and he doesn't care where he goes. And I believe Kevin Durant is really behind what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets. Whoa. Am I wrong there?
What, you think he's the mastermind behind all of this?
I think he's pulling the puppet strings. I do, yes.
No, Stugatz, it's quite simple. It's... he's sitting back and seeing what the end result is. He doesn't have to concern himself with the in-between stuff, the decision-making. It's just, yo, if it works out, then cool. If it doesn't work out, then I'll want to seek my options elsewhere. Remember, he's got like 4 years left on his deal or something, so it's not like he's got impending free agency on his side. So there's not much he can do in terms of puppet string pulling. That what we just witnessed was Kyrie being Kyrie. And, you know, I talked about it on this week's Basketball Illuminati, which is out now wherever you get podcasts. Basketball Illuminati, Basketball Illuminati, Basketball Illuminati. Say three times, keep your third eye open. That Kyrie Irving did all of this as a weird, like, thought experiment, right? Trying to show once again how he can manipulate people, manipulate the media, and, oh, I'm so much smarter than everybody else. And, oh, don't forget the Olympic gold medalist and NBA champion when you say my name, Kyrie Irving. It's all him doing his shtick. And if you're Durant, it basically comes down to, are you happy with the end result, meaning Kyrie opting in and this is the team that we have, or would you want something else?
I mean, the results through 2 years has not been past the Eastern Conference semifinals. In many instances, it's been without Kyrie Irving on the court while Kevin Durant is doing all the heavy lifting. And so and Kevin Durant's got, listen, I mean, he's got a window here where he's got to tack on a couple of more championships, I think, where he has an opportunity to tack on a couple of more championships to the resume. And maybe he's thinking to himself, hey, you know what? I can't do it with Kyrie Irving. The guy's not available. And when he is available, I don't know if it's enough to get through some of the teams in the East and certainly beat any team that we face in the finals out West.
Stugatz, by the way, I got to ask you how you feel about the Knicks moving all of heavens and the earth to clear enough cap space to sign Jalen Brunson.
Well, are they indeed doing it for Jalen Brunson? Like, could Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving be in play for the Knicks? I have no idea.
They're not. They're not.
No?
It's the Knicks, too, guys. So let's center ourselves here.
What I don't like about it, realizing the Knicks are doing the best that they can possibly do, Jalen Brunson wins you nothing. I don't care how good he was with Dallas last year in the postseason, and he was great when Luka was out. He was not nearly as great when Luka came back. But that was to be expected. It's like Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett. It's just, I mean, for me, okay, it's a nice move. It's not enough for the Knicks to do anything in the Eastern Conference. Having Jalen Brunson doesn't make you an elite team. It makes you, you know, a six seed in the East.
And that's the interesting thing about all of this. It's that you're doing all of this stuff to basically lock into a team that's okay.
Yeah. Right?
Isn't that like the next step forward for the Knicks? The next step forward for the Knicks is to be consistently okay, because you just dismissed, on one hand, their entire prospect to get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and go, well, they're the Knicks. The Knicks have some reputation building to do here. They have to make a step before they make themselves a reasonable destination for free agents. Their only route to getting one of the 15 best players is through the draft. They had their chance, and they got unlucky with not being able to get Zion Williamson. And that's,
Or John Morant,
right? So you had that opportunity. You didn't take it. And they're not an organization that's going to tank for very long. So I think it probably is about taking steps forward for them. And Jalen Brunson is a step forward.
I think the problem, Woody, is that the idea is that when you take these steps forward, is there a level of fiscal responsibility that we can do while we do it, right? Like, so the idea is like, okay, clearly this isn't a world-beating team. It's the Mr. Right Now, right? But you can't pay Mr. Right Now like he's Mr. Right. And when you talk about Julius Randle, who's locked in for 4 years, right? When you talk about Evan Fournier, 3 years. When you talk about now Jalen Brunson, who will be locked in for 4 years. You're going to be committing, what was that, about 53, almost $75 million to three guys that might get you out of the play-in. So now the rest of my and by the way, RJ Barrett, he has an extension coming up, right? Because, you know, we'll sign it this summer and it'll kick in next year. So in a couple of years, you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of, $100 million for four guys. Those four guys, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, Evan Fournier, Jalen Brunson. How good is that?
Four average guys.
Right. In the Eastern Conference, where you have Boston that's going to be good, you have Miami's always going to be a mix. Philly, for whatever issues they've had, they still have two tentpole guys. Brooklyn is going to be good. Like, what do you got? What do you have to show for that? A team that's going to be fighting with Washington and Indiana and Detroit for the battle to get to a playoff seed, it's just not enough.
I think the Fournier thing was definitely a pretty disastrous signing, and they probably have wanted to offload it from the second they signed it. But I do think that one playoff win that they had signaled something so strong that, like, it just, the Knicks need to be a consistently 48-win team. Like, they've been so far away from that, you can't even really make a credible pitch to free agents. Think about who they've hired in their front office. They hired guys who theoretically have the connections to get things done in the basketball industry. And if they're looking at the landscape and going, even we, who have at times represented the big-name basketball players, can't get them to come to New York, we have to pivot and do something that's solid. And I know that solid probably doesn't feel good for Knicks fans, but How do we get here from talking about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving?
Well, I mean, let me just.
Oh, he took me there.
Let me answer one thing to you. That team that won that one playoff game, it was actually well constructed in terms of salaries, right? Yeah, Julius Randle was making $18.9 million. He had like a couple years left at that point. RJ Barrett is on a rookie deal. Derrick Rose was on a 1 year deal, I believe. Nerlens Noel was on a 1 year deal. You know, like Frank Ntilikina was on a rookie deal. Like it was a very fiscally responsible collection. And they had won one playoff game and said, pay everybody. And the craziest part was Reggie Bullock, who was one of their better performers, they let him go in order to sign Evan Fournier for twice as much money as what Reggie Bullock got from Dallas, despite not being able to do anything twice as well as Reggie Bullock. And that's right. What I'm talking about. It's when you're dealing with a salary cap sport, you're in a constant trade-off, right? It's not, is Evan Fournier worth 18 a year? It's like, it's if I don't spend this 18 on him, what can I spend it on? What kind of stuff can I get? Can I get someone who's maybe not as good as Evan Fournier, but good enough for less? And the answer is they had that guy and they let him walk.
But do you think that Jalen Brunson is that? Is he someone where could we spend these $30 million a year on a better player at this moment in time or redistribute it to three other available free agents and make our team better?
I think if I were the Knicks, I would want to get my books in order again. Ironically, all the guys they moved off of in the last couple of, you know, few days to clear this cap space are all the guys who had the good deals, the manageable deals, right? Alec Burks had 1 year left, Nerlens Noel. Derrick Rose has 1 year left. Kemba Walker had 1 year left. Like, it's just like after this following season. So all they're left with is all the guys with the bad contracts. That's right. What they're building the team around. And if you're telling me BS, but this team can be a four seed, then I'm like, okay, the problem is I'm looking at this and I like Jalen Brunson. I think he's a good player, but I'm seeing a team that's probably going to be fighting in the play-in. And if you're spending all that money just to be in the play-in, then no, I don't think that's a step forward. I think that's entrenching yourself in a place that you don't want to be.
I think what's interesting about the Knicks, if there's anything interesting, is, I mean, they're going to have to build it through the draft because stars don't want to go there for whatever reason. So RJ Barrett, at least you know he wants to be a Knick for life. You know, his dad played for the Knicks. He loves New York. That's his dream. He's wanted to be there his entire life. I think Jalen Brunson, same with him. That's the case. Like, that's a guy who wants to play at Madison Square Garden, wants to be a New York Knick. So you'll have your backcourt for the next 10 years, I guess, right? But is that backcourt enough? Are those two guys good enough to attract free agent superstars to come to New York and want to play for that owner in that building? Because superstars just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, and that coach also. We got to remember that Tibbs has a rep out there as far as being like wearing people down. But the thing about Brunson, besides, by the way, the Knicks hired his dad, Stugatz. I know you like that one, right? Like,
I love that. Yeah. Right. Only if the son was better, though, you know?
I mean, Jalen Brunson's not good enough to hire his dad.
The Knicks brass also just randomly showed up at a Dallas playoff game.
Oh, yeah.
They sat there with their Knicks quarter zips on. Yeah. Like, hey, we're here.
Hey, hi, we're the Knicks, yeah. Stugatz, you'll love this little fun fact. RJ Barrett, if he signs his extension this summer, will be the first Knicks first round pick to sign a rookie extension since Charlie Ward. Since Charlie Ward, 1994.
I wish you let me guess. Amazing. I would have said Patrick Ewing.
No,
Patrick. I would have said the same thing, Whittingham. That's funny. I would have said Patrick Ewing.
Charlie Ward is like disappointing to you guys as an answer.
I mean, no, it's not. It's incredible.
No,
I
actually, it's perfectly Nick.
I have a basketball non sequitur to bring up. This really pissed me off yesterday. Stugatz, did you know that the Miami Heat can't trade Bam Adebayo for Kevin Durant?
Can I get it? Who?
Adrees Adebayo for Kevin Durant. That by the CBA.
No, I didn't know that. And first off, the Heat can do whatever the hell they want.
No, they can't.
About?
They can't. Like, by the CBA, they cannot. So I learned this yesterday. Can. So Bobby Marks on the Zach Lowe podcast, Lowe Post, explain that there is a thing in the CBA, which is that if you sign the big rookie extension, what they call a designated player extension, which is you qualified, you hit some benchmarks, and you sign a bigger extension than you would be due as a rookie. If you sign that extension, you're considered what's called a designated player. The Brooklyn Nets already have one of those in Ben Simmons. They would then be trading for another and Bam Adebayo. You're allowed to have two on your roster, but you can't trade for two on your roster. Yep. You have to have signed one of your own and only trade for one. So they can't trade for two. So because of that rule, Bam Adebayo is ineligible to play for the Brooklyn Nets. Even if the Heat wanted to, they could not trade Bam Adebayo for Kevin Durant. That trade is dead. It's not happening.
They would need a third team.
Right, to take
Idris.
Right. And then you shift things elsewhere. Yeah. But if they wanted to do a straight up trade, Bam,
who?
Idris for Kevin Durant, they simply cannot. It would be nullified by the league. Which,
what if Ben Simmons isn't playing though? Like,
no, but he's on the roster. He's on the roster.
You can't have two of those guys on the roster
that you've traded for. You can have two on the roster, one of which you sign. You can't have two that you traded for. And I just have one question: Amin Elhassan.
Yes.
Why are the NBA rules so f***ing complicated? Like, what? Like, why? Why is it like only 12 people in the universe can understand? Like, I'm a basketball fan. Right. I want to get excited about my team being able to trade for Kevin Durant. And what I have to know, in order for that to not be the case, is some arcane section. I know this is rich coming from me. Some accountant in some cubicle going, we're pushing his glasses up to his forehead going, excuse me, sir, this actually violates Section 16, Rule 3, Subsection 4, Roman numeral 7.
I feel like that person
NBA
would be you.
I know, it is me, but I still hate this person. Why did we create the rules this way? Why? Why would we make it so untenable for fans to just be like, can I just trade for that player? No, because you're trading for two designated players. No one knows what the hell that means.
Every NBA rule that you're like, why do we do it that way, is because some owner bitched about something happening to them. And like, they're like, okay, we're going to have a rule now that says we can't do this or that. So, by the way, this is the same reason why the Suns didn't want to give Ayton a max extension, because that would make him designated player, and then that would limit their ability to acquire another one beyond you know, him, because him and Booker are already on that.
Who's going to be the first American sport to decide enough with the rules, enough with, you know, in football, it's the guaranteed numbers. In the NBA, it's this. MLS has all kinds of bizarre rules. I mean, I guess
are you anti-union, Woody?
No, I'm not. Well, actually, I'm in a way I am. Because
are you anti-rules? Like, who is this person talking right now?
In a way, I am, because I kind of want to see a world in which the NBA owners are just told, no more rules, no more salary cap.
He wants a free market.
Go. I want, like, Steve Ballmer to have, like, a $400 million payroll, because he would. But he absolutely would to win a title. He'd pay LeBron $100 million a year.
It's crazy, Witty, because you're asking for the people who make the rules to tell themselves to stop making rules, right? Like, you're saying, hey, tell the NBA owners no more rules. They're the ones that are making the rules.
But it's like, I don't think that they want to make the... I think they have to set restrictions on themselves in order to tame themselves from chucking $80 million at the next superstar that becomes available. Because they want to, but they can't, because it's bad for their wallet.
It's not even that. It's literally to... Because some of them feel unprotected, right? They feel like if they did a lawless kind of anything goes economy, that the Ballmers and the Dolans would absolutely annihilate everybody else, right? If I can have a $400 million payroll, not luxury tax, but just straight up payroll, I'm paying players an exorbitant amount of money, kind of like what Real Madrid and PSG do in soccer, then the Robert Sarvers, the, you know, Tony Wrestlers in Atlanta, the Michael Jordan's, right? All of them are like,
what? Well, named Herb in Indiana. What's his name?
Simons. Herb? Yeah. Simons, have you ever been to a mall that says Simon Mall? That's them.
Really?
Yep. So, you know, they're saying, oh my God, how can we keep up? Yeah, Simon Malls. You go to the mall and they got that little sign that says Simon. Well, welcome to a Simon
Mall. Love a good Simon Mall.
Yeah, man.
Of course you do.
And they own the Pacers. And by the way, think about that. Imagine if all your money was tied up in malls. Yeah, that's... That's a burgeoning business, right?
Tough business to be in right now.
Right, so they're looking
it's
at it.
It's also real estate. I mean, it's not just the mall.
That's exactly what it is. It's real estate. But guess what, Stugatz? If no one's renting, no one's leasing,
right?
It's a little bit of a kick in the balls. So
yeah, but you can still sell the real estate and build like a housing community, you know?
I mean, I guess, but I mean, they haven't done that clearly, right?
I know. So they're getting to it.
They're getting to it. So Witty, so what you're saying basically is this structure that was designed not just to keep people in check, but also to make sure everyone is financially viable, which is something that European or international sports doesn't care about. You can make your money. You can't make money, tough luck. And you know this very well. A lot of the smaller clubs in Europe exist by transfer fees. That's where they exist, to scout, find the next young great thing, and then hope someone comes up like Real Madrid. Oh, we'll give you 50 million euros for him. Like, sold. And that's our budget for the next 3 years.
Yeah. That sounds cool.
You want that. You want the Pacers to basically be a minor league team.
We're in the middle of the transfer window right now. It's awesome. Your team can go and get whatever player they want. They just have to decide with the team and with the player. We want you. You're signed. That's fairly simple for me to understand as a sports fan.
But I think what Whittingham really wants to know here is, and I think we all want to know, and somehow we've gone 20 minutes without discussing what the the Heat have to do to get Kevin Durant.
I thought about without discussing Jess's poster.
Well, we'll get to Jess's poster in a second, but if they can't trade Bam, which is a problem because Bam would be a big chip, and I understand Whittingham wanting Kevin Durant as a Heat fan. I think most Heat fans would want Kevin Durant to come down here if indeed that is a possibility. So what would the Heat have to get? First off, is it a realistic possibility that he's actually going to get traded?
Secondly, if it were now.
The Heat, because you know Riley would go after that, right? Like, you know he would be in on that game. What would the Heat have to give up? It would be like Tyler Herro or Bam, would it not?
Or Tyler Herro who? I'm sorry?
Or Bam.
Who's that? I'm not familiar
Idris
with
Adebayo.
Oh, Idris Adebayo. Sorry. Okay. I got confused there. I was like, what?
Bam. So you got the answers, you don't get him.
Yeah. No, you don't get him.
Like, some other team is going to put together a super, like, an offer with a better young player than Herro and all of your, like, I don't even think the Heat would do Herro and all of their draft assets. Like, they're gonna go back to just evaporating all of their draft capital again for a guy who's entering his 16th season in the league.
I say, yeah, if that's what it takes to get him, yes. But the thing is he gettable? I don't think he's available. I don't think he wants to move.
I mean, this is like Kyrie Irving opting in is. The beginning of this. Like, do you really think that after this year, if Kyrie Irving, after playing his opt-in season, says I'm out, that Kevin Durant doesn't say I'm out too?
No, like, I'm saying that, like, if Kyrie opting in now gives Brooklyn extreme latitude to seek a trade for him. So you don't do it now because obviously his value is shot. But he comes back next year and he's playing every game and he's playing well. And it's like, all right, let's start listening. What are the offers out there? And you do a deal, you get back. We talked about this yesterday, Stugatz. You don't get back equal talent, but you get a bunch of really good players. You get three or four really good players. You go back to Durant and you say, okay, it's you, it's Ben Simmons, it's Joe Harris and Seth Curry and all these other very good role players that fit in everywhere. And let's go to town. And we'll be better defensively and we'll have more shooting around you and we'll be more calm. Like, there has to be a part of him that looks at this like, that sounds pretty good. So I don't think Durant is anywhere near the get me the hell out of here, because I don't think Durant is tied to Kyrie that tightly. I think he likes him, he likes playing with him, but he also likes winning. And if you can go out and get somebody else that helps him for that, he's not tied to
Brooklyn either, though. It's not like there's some, like, deep connection between himself. Well, like, I actually think of any of the entities here, he is most tied to Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, but Whitty, what he's doing, if he leaves Brooklyn, he's admitting failure there. So, and so I don't know if that's something that he wants.
I think...
Well, it's a failed experiment, you would agree, right?
But Stugatz, you were asking earlier, why is, you know, Kevin Durant hitched his wagon to Kyrie Irving? Because he wants to. I think he kind of enjoys the thumb in the eye of the media stuff that he pulled this week. Like, I really think they've connected as characters. I you know, if I were an NBA superstar that were interested in my legacy or whatever, I wouldn't connect to Kyrie Irving as a superstar, but clearly is connected to him in some way because he's putting out there that the organization didn't try hard enough to understand Kyrie when things looked like they were going south. He's connected to this person. And I think if Brooklyn decide they don't want any more of this, that Kevin Durant, like, we can no longer be surprised when any superstar wants to leave his team. Because it happens so often. We think, all right, well, that's the end of this cycle. James Harden and Ben Simmons swap between Philly and Brooklyn. The next one is never that far away. And so I don't actually think it's that preposterous to talk about Kevin Durant to Miami or Kevin Durant going to anywhere.
There's a guy on Instagram who does Skip Bayless impersonations. And I die laughing every single time. It's his name is Josh Rosen.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, Josh Rosen Impressions. And what's funny about it is he's nailed that Skip will adjust his papers at the beginning of his take, do a little hop, and always declare, "It's my turn. It's my turn now." It kills me every single time. He just did one with Westbrook side by side. He calls him Westbrick. "It's my turn. It's my turn, Russell Westbrick." Good times.
Well, thank you for taking us there. We were in the middle of a discussion.